In a heavily Democratic state, Republican Governor Larry Hogan has found success in portraying himself as a moderate who works across the aisle. He often peppers his speeches with the phrase, "common sense, bipartisan solutions." Hogan has so identified with the idea of bipartisanship that he even boasted on election night last year that he rode a purple surfboard to victory.
And tonight, in this deep blue state, in this blue year, with a blue wave, it turns out I can surf, and we had a purple surfboard.
But when it comes down to it, how bipartisan is Governor Larry Hogan?
They said it was impossible. They said it couldn't be done in Maryland. But thanks to all of you, we just went out and did it. Four years ago, we ushered in a new era of bipartisanship. We sought that middle ground where we can all stand together. And I'm proud that we're setting an example for the rest of America.
This is Roughly Speaking, Newsroom Edition, the flagship podcast of the Baltimore Sun, featuring stories from our city and our state that you can't get anywhere else. I'm Pamela Wood. Thanks for joining us. In recent weeks, Hogan has sparked anger and frustration among Democrats after deciding not to spend hundreds of millions of dollars that they set aside in the state budget for programs including summer jobs for Baltimore City teens, testing a backlog of rape kits, and bolstering the financially tenuous Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Those Democrats are now crying foul at the governor's decision, and they say it's proof that Larry Hogan isn't so bipartisan after all. On this episode, State House reporter Luke Broadwater joins me in the Baltimore Sun Sound Studio to break down Larry Hogan's promises of bipartisanship and how this latest budget battle plays into that. Luke, thanks for joining me.
Hey, good afternoon.
So let's start with the current dust-up going on between Governor Hogan and Democratic lawmakers. This is about fenced-off money in the state budget. What exactly is fenced-off money?
Okay, so the Maryland Constitution gives the governor great power over the budget. And the governor can introduce the budget. The legislature can only cut funds from it but can't add. So the way they try to get around that is they do something called fencing off. So Governor Hogan submits his budget and they say, we don't like this, that, and we're going to cut those things. But we're going to suggest to the governor that he replace those funds with these funds that we want. And they then pass legislation, say, for the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra or for funding rape kit testing. And they say this money has to be used for this purpose by law. But the governor, under the Constitution, has no obligation to actually release that money in the same fiscal year.
I know this is something that's typical, right? That this happens every year that lawmakers make changes to the governor's budget. This has happened under Republicans and Democrats, right?
That's right. But when you have divided government, when you have a Republican in the governor's mansion and a Democratic-controlled legislature, you get the friction. This used to happen under Governor O'Malley, but Governor O'Malley didn't much care or want to fight with the Democratic legislature because he pretty much agreed with them. So if they cut some of the things that he wanted and they added some of their own, they're kind of on the same page and they say, well, okay, go ahead and sign those bills and let's fund those things. Now under Hogan, though, where you have, you know, sometimes very different visions of government and what things should be spent on, you have this great tension now.
And now, what is Governor Hogan's track record here in spending fenced-off money? Some years he's actually gone ahead and spent it the way that lawmakers wanted to, and some years, including this year, he hasn't, right?
That's right. The last big clash was 2016. He withheld $80 million in the fenced-off money. But this is by far the worst it's ever been between Hogan and the legislature. It's $245 million. It's a ton of money for school construction. About half of it's for school construction. And a whole slew of priorities, a lot of which are in Baltimore. And the reason for that is simple. The head of the Appropriations Committee in the General Assembly in the House is Maggie McIntosh, who is a Baltimorean and loves to put stuff in the budget for Baltimore. And so if you look at the list that Governor Larry Hogan withheld, there's at least a dozen things, if not more, specifically for Baltimore that he is not going to fund.
Yeah, and what are some more of these items that are on the fenced-off list that he's not going to spend the money on?
Sure. Well, in addition to the school construction, which is by far the most, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, that's gotten a ton of coverage in the Sun. I'm sure our readers out there have all seen lots of stories on the Symphony Orchestra. They really needed $1.6 million to try to make payroll this summer. And the governor said, I'm not throwing good money after bad. This is a financially mismanaged institution and you're not getting any more money. There's that. There's money for flood cleanup in southwest Baltimore. There, you know, everybody remembers the Ellicott City flood from a couple years ago. Well, also southwest Baltimore got hit pretty bad with flooding. And there was some aid, about $600,000 for southwest Baltimore in the budget. There was $1 million for Youth Works, which is the city's summer jobs program. And that amounts to about 600 youth having summer jobs. So there's quite a few things in the budget for Baltimore that one are not going to get funded now because of this impasse.
Let's keep putting people's priorities before partisan interests. Let's continue to tackle our common problems by accepting our shared responsibility to solve them. Let's repudiate the debilitating politics practiced elsewhere, including just down the road in Washington, where insults substitute for debate, recriminations for negotiation, and gridlock for compromise.
Now, what's Governor Hogan's justification for not wanting to spend this money? You mentioned the BSO, but what about some of these other items, which I would imagine would be pretty popular? Why isn't he going to spend the money?
So his thing is fiscal responsibility, which I'll get to in a minute because the Democrats say that's hypocritical. But he points to, not in this budget, because this budget is balanced. There's money in the budget right now for these programs. He's saying next year we have a projected deficit of $961 million. And so I'm going to hold back some of this money from this year's budget, carry it over to next year, and try to help resolve the deficit, the projected deficit, that way. Democrats say this is hypocritical because the budget that Larry Hogan proposed was actually bigger than the budget that they passed at the end of the day. So they're saying if he was so concerned about fiscal responsibility, why did he introduce this budget that's been larger than our budget? Now, he would come back and say, well, some of my budget was going to shoring up pension funds and the rainy day fund. So that is a more conservative approach than rushing the money out the door for these things for Baltimore City.
And now, what happens with this money if it's not spent? It will just, what, sit there? He can carry it over till next year?
Yeah, by law, it can either be spent on these purposes that the Democrats wanted, that the legislature wanted. And I should note the budget was passed in a bipartisan way. So vast majority of Republicans in the General Assembly agreed to this budget. I think there were only 3 no votes in the House on the budget. But so the rape kits, let's use that example. Fenced off money can only be spent on the rape kits, on testing them.
So it's on nothing.
So it gets carried over to the next year. So those are the options. It's not like he can go ahead and put it into, back into the pension fund.
Mm-hmm. So now the governor did make some comments about trying to drum up some money for a few of these items. Can you explain to me what that's about?
Yes. So he was at the Board of Public Works. He makes his speech, calls the Democrats reckless. He says they're playing gimmicks with the budget and budgetary shell games. And he said, but even though I'm not releasing any of this money, I'm instructing my agencies on public safety and health. And he listed about 10 specific items in the fenced off funds. And he said, I want you to go into agencies. I want you to go into your budgets, find savings wherever they are, whether that's not filling staff positions or other savings, to fund the rape kit testing, to fund technology for the police department, things like that. So he did release a list of things he would try to find funding for. But as of right now, we do not know exactly where that funding is going to come from. So it's in doubt still whether these rape kits will get tested. Now, the governor's office came down and they pledged you know, repeatedly, we will fund the rape kit testing. Like, please don't say we're not going to fund the rape kit testing. And so they're promising to do that. So we're going to keep checking with them to see whether or not they keep their promise.
And it is that kind of common sense pragmatism that has guided our path forward. We didn't demand Republican solutions or Democratic solutions. We sought out bipartisan, common sense solutions that worked for the people of Maryland. We found a way to disagree without being disagreeable. We stood side by side. Our different views clearly acknowledged, but not obstructing our path forward.
And now with all this going on, you mentioned the governor called lawmakers reckless and playing tricks with the budget. You recently talked to some Democrats who had harsh words back against the governor. What kinds of things are they saying about this decision?
Yeah, they think it's disingenuous. They think he's being a hypocrite. They think on one hand, he says, we're very bipartisan here in Maryland. We work together. And here the Democrats, they say they've found a way to pay for these things. A bipartisan legislature passed the thing. So almost all the Republicans in the General Assembly agreed to these priorities. And then the governor comes at the last minute and kicks out this bipartisan agreement. And that's their point of view. You know, at Hogan's point of view, I think he thinks the Democrats aren't so bipartisan, that they went ahead and slashed his budget and certain things that he wanted. They cut the Boost program for private schools. They cut some of the P-TECH funding for schools. They cut the Triple P, public-private partnership for road widening, some of the money for that. So he looks at it and said, they cut my priorities. Well, I'm going to withhold theirs. And, you know, neither side's being terribly bipartisan. And at the end of the day, frankly, this is really a power struggle. And it is a message that the governor is sending to the Democrats in the legislature. Don't monkey with my budget like that. I don't know how else to really interpret that. That's clearly the message they're sending. Because the argument about the structural deficit doesn't totally make sense. You know, you don't fix a structural deficit by withholding one-time funding, right? You got to fix the structural funding.
And this one-time funding is in this year's budget, which is balanced, and as the state is required to have a balanced budget every single year. And so this could play into next year, right? So next year's budget, this projected $900 million-plus deficit, do you expect that we're going to see these same types of fights when that budget's put through?
Yeah, I think it's only going to get worse. We've got the Kerwin Commission's recommendations coming up. That's going to amount to $4 billion more annually for public schools. The governor's been very skeptical about that, although he did release funding for Kerwin this first year. So we're going to have a big fight over that. Like, even with legalizing marijuana, even with legalizing sports betting, that doesn't get you anywhere close to the money you need for Kerwin. You're going to probably have to raise taxes, and nobody wants to raise taxes. Buckle up. If you think this was got ugly this year, it'll probably get more ugly next year.
As a young man, I was proud to work for President Ronald Reagan, who said, "There is no limit to the amount of good you can do if you don't care who gets the credit." And you all deserve a lot of credit. Thank you.
Luke, thank you so much for coming in to explain all of this. How can readers follow your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at Luke Broadwater. And, of course, you can read all of our articles on state politics on thebaltimoresun.com.
And that wraps up this week's Newsroom Edition. Thank you for joining us. For more audio from The Baltimore Sun, head on over to baltimoresun.com/roughlyspeaking or wherever you get your podcasts. And while times change, the need for quality journalism doesn't. So please consider subscribing to The Baltimore Sun at baltimoresun.com/subscribe. For producers Hallie Miller and Steve Early, thanks again, and we'll see you back here next week.